Monet and Christian.
And you are listening to CFRC 101.9.
All right, let's do this.
I am a homesick wanderer, ready to settle down. Whenever I get a moment of rest, no peace can ever be found.
There's a peace in my soul in each place that I've been. Never grow, but I think of them fondly each place that we go. Wonder if we'll ever get home.
Homestead high. Homestead heart and my traveling feet. I can stare at the skyscrapers missing the fields. And the ocean, the pothole field drives. But when I finally get there and the bustle disappears,
it almost brings me to tears.
Homestead heart and traveling feet.
Neither will ever agree.
One yearns for home, one yearns to be free. See my homestead heart and my traveling feet.
They'll say she's been finding herself for years,
but I'll say she's only gotten more lost.
And her heart always aches, but if you keep on begging for more,
I wonder what they're searching for.
What if I'm never truly happy?
What if the urge to run never disappears?
What if I always feel lost in a big new city?
Or stuck back home? Maybe both would be a pity. Homestead heart and traveling feet.
And traveling feet. Neither will ever agree.
One yearns for home, one yearns to be free. homestead heart and my traveling feet. Homestead heart and traveling feet.
And traveling feet.
Neither will ever agree. One yearns for home, one yearns to be free. My homestead heart and my traveling feet.
It's Hayden with CFRC Live Sessions, and I'm here with Monet and Christian, and you just heard their song Homestead Heart.
Yeah.
I think that that's a great song to be the first one to introduce you to people. Tell us about that, the writing of that song, because I'll tell you what I heard in it after you give us sort of the backstory of how that song came to be.
Well, the backstory of the song is basically that we move around a lot. We lived in England for a couple years, and I'm from New Brunswick, and Christian's from Ontario, and we work on cruise ships. Basically, what I'm trying to get at
is that
we're
never rooted anywhere.
Yeah, we're never rooted anywhere. We're always moving around, and everywhere we are, when we're in Toronto, for example, I complain about it and I'm like, I want to go back to New Brunswick. Then when I'm in New Brunswick, I get bored after a little bit and then I want to be back in the big city. But we keep wanting to find home, and we like everywhere we've been for different reasons. So we feel a little bit lost.
Yeah,
that's kind of what the song's about.
That's what I was getting from it, is that you guys kind of embody this like traveling sort of poetic duo sort of thing, where you are all over not only Canada but the world with these songs. And I think that Homestead Heart is a great song to sort of introduce you guys. But you guys are folk singers, first and foremost, and you're playing all these original songs for us today. I know you guys are, when you're performing, you do a lot of covers, and you know a lot of cover songs as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to writing music, where do you guys tend to start? Because there's lots of ways to approach the folk genre.
Most of our songs, the lyrics are written by Monet. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of different ways to approach the folk genre. But we met in theater school. We both did the acting thing, and the Monet's got a master's in musical theater, and I have a master's in acting. So storytelling is the primary focus of our music. So a lot of it starts from the lyrics, which Monet writes predominantly. I'm sure your phone's note app is absolutely full of like,
it's full of nonsense.
Things. And then every once in a while, just like borrow her phone and open the notes app and just start like pulling out things that I want to work on today.
Yeah.
And or then, you'll be like, this one, I want you to do this one.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Sometimes it'll be like that. And then generally Christian will come up with some sort of melody, like something for us to start with. And then from there we'll arrange it and try, and it's all about the story though. Whatever story we're trying to tell, we try and see how we can divvy it up to best tell the story.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense given what we know about you guys, that storytelling is kind of your heart and soul of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the sort of traveling and unrootedness that you guys have gives you access to a type of storytelling that you might not have if you just lived in Toronto or just lived in New Brunswick? Because I have to imagine that you pick up stories from traveling all over Canada and the world.
I mean, now that you mention it, I think so. I've never...
I think more so what we pick up is different sounds. Like, Homestead Heart, in part, has, I think, a bit of a Celtic feel. And I associate that with... I was born in Nova Scotia, with kind of the Nova Scotian roots. But then some of our other music has more, like, rock influence or pop influence. And that, it's like, as we've gone... You know, as we've traveled around and learned a bunch of covers for cruise ships and stuff, we kind of keep picking up different genres. Mm. So folk is kind of where we begin, but some of our music, I think, branches out into other genres, if that makes sense.
Yeah, depending on whatever we've been. And it does change with the travels. Like, as we said, we work on cruise ships, and where the cruise ship is boarding out of, it'll have a different demographic of people who will ask us to learn songs for them while they're on. And so there's a lot of influences in the songs we write that are influenced by whatever we happen to be listening to at that time. Like, we just finished a cruise contract that was out of Australia, and we were getting requested a lot of like Australian-based artists that we hadn't heard before.
Yeah, so now we'll write an AC/DC inspired
song. Yeah,
that we
will. Yeah, exactly.
That's not true, just so everybody knows.
Well, tell us about this next song, the second song that we're about to hear.
It is called Stuck, and it is the first song that we wrote together, excluding, I should say, for clarity, we did write a musical about Twilight during the pandemic. That was actually the first songs we wrote, and that is on the internet somewhere if anyone cares to do the work to find it. But this is the first standalone song that we wrote together.
Yeah, we wrote it in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a little bit about having anxiety and feeling like you can be in a room full of people and feel like you're struggling to connect with them, like you're somewhere else. That's a little bit dramatic.
Everything we do is a little bit dramatic.
Yeah. I know. Everything, when my dad first heard Stuck in some of our first songs in our EP, he was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, but in songs, I feel like everything is visceral. It's exaggerated, but it's basically about feeling like you're with a bunch of people, but you're separate. You can't connect."
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All
right. Well, this is Stuck by Monet and Christian.
Gazing at stars, you try to reach her, but she's gone too far. She's stuck in her mind again, stuck in her mind again. She'll come down for a minute and float far away, not sure how to get her to stay. She's so far away. Her parents are fighting, but it doesn't show. She's stuck where denial can grow, and I know that she's stuck in her mind again, stuck in her mind again. Her phone, the TV show, the books that she brings everywhere. It's a mask she wears, so it seems she doesn't care, so she can get stuck. 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 She's here at the bar, but she's numb to the crowd. It's the only way that she won't break down. She's stuck in her mind again, stuck in her mind again.
We are Monet and Christian,
and you just heard our song Stuck.
Now, you guys mentioned before we heard that song that, barring your Twilight musical, that was the first song that you wrote together, and that in your songwriting and just in songwriting in general, things tend to be dramatic and more heightened than they are maybe in real life. And that's kind of somewhere that I also want to talk with you guys about, is that you met through musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you are performers most of your musical life, whether it be cruise ships or touring. Do you bring sort of a musical theater or theatricality aspect to your performance, or do you try to when you can?
I think so.
Whether we try to or not, I think we do.
Sure. Yeah.
We often have people, after they see us perform, if they don't know us and they don't already know that we're a theater background, they'll come up to us and be like, "You studied theater."
Yeah.
And I just think we've trained in it for so long. Like I said, we both have master's degrees in that background. And it's the way, I never intended to sing folk music or pop music. That wasn't my initial goal. it kind of happened that way over the pandemic. I kind of fell into it. So we can't really escape our roots.
Yeah. Just it's been drilled into us since.
And I think it affects our story writing as well. Mm. A lot of musical theater songs have a clear arc with like the climaxes in the middle. So it'll start quietly and then it'll build in the middle and then probably end somewhat quietly as well. A lot of contemporary musical theater. And I think sometimes we model our stories with that.
We just went through so many classes of teachers being like, what arc does your character go on during this song? That it's just like we naturally write some things that way, I think, now.
But it makes for good folk writing as well.
Yeah.
And also not only storytelling wise, but also sonically. Like some of your songs build and then fall off, or some of them build and build until the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sonically, like, is that something that you think about as well when you're making the...
A little bit, yes.
I personally do love a dramatic dynamic change. Mm-hmm. I'm a real sucker for them.
Well, I think we had... This wasn't in musical theater school. This actually might have been one of our first managers when we started working as a duo on cruise ships. He pointed out to us that if you belt, for example, for 5 minutes, eventually, it doesn't matter how impressive it is, people will tune it out. They'll stop listening to you. But if you've got a big belt part and then you stop and then you're suddenly quiet, that's when they tune in, like their ears... You know, they were used to something and then it's changed. And that wakes everybody up. So I think we try and have, for lack of a better word, like moments of impact in our songs, kind of at key lyrical points.
Yeah. You're laughing, but that I think that is, I would 100% agree with you on that. I think we really go, that's what we try to do anyways. Yeah.
It definitely does come through in the songs. Tell us about the next song that's coming up here and how that applies there.
This is our song Respite, and it's probably one of our heaviest hitting ones, as heavy as you can hit on an acoustic guitar. It is not out anywhere yet, but
it's recorded. It's ready to go, so it will be soon.
And I think, I mean, you'll hear it. This one starts quiet and then gets real loud, but I think... You talk. It's your song.
Well, it's your song, too. But we wrote the lyrics. We wrote the whole song, actually, while we were visiting New Brunswick last summer. And I was thinking about the word respite and like respite care. And what does that mean? And I was looking it up and I kind of was working with the idea of having a soft place to land. And for me, that's New Brunswick. Whenever I go home, it's a place that's safe. And yeah. And I think Christian, we are a couple. Christian's also a safe space for me. So the song is kind of about finding a place of like safety. And I don't mean to say that I'm unsafe. I just mean, you know, calm and respite. Yeah. I described that really badly.
That's perfect.
Good. It's great.
And you can hear it now on CFRC.
Summer rain from a warm chair. Pull me in, pour your hands through my hair. No words, just the sound of the pitter-patter. No plans, you're the only thing that matters. Baby, been looking for some rest, me baby, and I wonder, could you help me, baby? Been looking for some rest, me lately. I've got you in close, you're all mine. Close your eyes, we're gonna be fine. Rest me, baby.
Been looking for some
rest.
kiss me, baby. And I wonder, could I rest you safely? Been yearning for some rest lately. Got you so close, can you see I'm solid? Melt into me and forget all your problems. Rest it, baby.
We are Monet and Christian,
and this was Respite.
And you mentioned before we came in there that that song is recorded now, but not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys do have new music coming on the way. Homestead Heart, the song that we heard at the top of the show, is coming very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about your performance aspect, your writing aspect, but your recording, I have to imagine that bringing the theatricality to the recording studio is like a totally different thing.
Yeah, it's, I feel we're still figuring it out. Exactly, like we've always been live performers first, so it is somewhat of a different beast. And my dad's actually a sound and recording engineer, but I'm still learning how to best bring us to it. These Respite and Homestead Heart, which is coming out, we recorded with his name is Joey Assad. He's a sound engineer from Toronto, and he really helped bring these to life.
Yeah, he's
in the studio.
Wonderful.
Yeah, he's, and actually you'll hear when Homestead Heart comes out, he's a fiddler as well. He's added a fiddle line to it, which is really,
it ties the whole song together.
It really does. Yeah. But yeah, he was really excited about bringing our vocals specifically to, because a lot of times you'll record vocals separately, but having us record together in the same room to get the harmonies, because so much of what our songs are is us playing off of each other. It's not two separate lines that just sound nice together. It's important that, so I think that's hopefully what comes through in the recordings too, and not just in our live performances.
Yeah, I find recording really hard. Like it really is a different beast because we're live performers. Generally it's a one and done, you know, you sing the song, you hope it goes well, but even if it doesn't, it's over. Whereas
you
the
have
recordings,
to hear it again afterwards.
The recordings live forever to haunt you potentially.
Monet is a massive perfectionist.
Yes, I really. So I am. So I find it difficult when we're recording to just be free the way I am on stage, because you're always, you know, you see the mic in front of you and you're like, I bet I can do even better. And then it, you know, then you've got to stop yourself from doing it 1,000 times.
Yes.
Yeah, and you kind of have the opportunity to correct yourself.
That's the thing, which is good and bad, because obviously we want them to be right. But there comes a point where you're, you know, there sometimes flaws in music sound good. Mm-hmm. Like if something is completely perfect or completely auto-tuned, I don't know, it loses.
It's harder to connect to.
Yeah, that's what I...
Yeah.
That's what I think. But I still, despite that, want it to be perfect.
Well, Homestead Heart is coming out very, very soon. It's coming out on, was it August 16th?
August 16th, yep.
And people can listen to that everywhere. Yep. But where can people keep up with you guys? Because you are traveling all over the place, but where can people track down Monet and Christian?
We are on all social media, but the best place to keep up with us is our Instagram, which is at Monet and Christian Music. Monet's name is spelled like the painter, and my name is spelled the normal way you would spell Christian, like the religion or the Batman or however you prefer to think of it.
Yes, please follow us.
Yeah. All right, well, Monet and Christian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we'll see you again soon.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Shines up windows from another building. Springtime, it's been a long time coming. Changing my feelings, unexpected. Won't you help me? I'm still here in my apartment, just watching the day go by.
Where does one go when one needs to get away from oneself, babe? Can I slip into smoke machines?
Saturday, August 24th, it all begins again. The ecstasy.
Richardson Stadium comes alive. Alex Parikin is hype. I'm hype. I love football.
The exhilaration.
And there he goes. That man is bad. That man is fast. And he is up over the 50, still on his feet.
The heartbreak.
And Laurier wins on an absolute heartbreaker at Richardson Stadium.
The pain.
No!
All part of a long journey to football immortality for the Queen's Gaels. And on Saturday, August 24th, in Windsor, Ontario, it all begins again. 3:45 p.m. pregame show, 4 p.m. kickoff, and there's only one place you can catch all the action.
This is Queen's Football on CFRC.
The first atomic bomb, named Little Boy, was dropped on Hiroshima, Japan, from the Enola Gay, a B-29 bomber, at 8:15 a.m. on August 6, 1945. Within seconds of the blast, temperatures in the city center reached 3,000 to 4,000 degrees Celsius, and Hiroshima was instantly transformed into a hellscape for every living soul. Today on Wings, Dr. Heideko Tamara Snyder, who survived the bombing as a 10-year-old, shares remembrances and speaks to the imperative for continued anti-nuclear proliferation activism.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is Robin Erickson for Wings. On August 6, 1945, the United States dropped the first atomic bomb on the city of Hiroshima in Japan. The bomb's explosive power was equivalent to 15,000 tons of TNT, resulting in mass destruction, death, and the release of toxic radioactivity into the atmosphere. Approximately 60% of the city was destroyed immediately. 42 out of 45 hospitals were knocked out of service, and 90% of Hiroshima's doctors and nurses were killed by the bomb. Some who entered Hiroshima after the bombing also perished from the radioactivity. Between the bombing and the mysterious illnesses resulting from the radioactivity, an estimated 140,000 people had been killed by the end of 1945. 5 to 6 years after the atomic bomb fell, many survivors had developed leukemia, and after a decade later, survivors were suffering from thyroid, breast, lung, and other cancers. Heideko Tamara Snyder was 10 years old when she survived the atomic bomb of Hiroshima. She helped found One Sunny Day Initiatives and is the author of One Sunny Day, A Child's Memories of Hiroshima, published by the Oregon State University Press. She lives in Oregon, where she dedicates herself to promoting peace and reconciliation, and joins me now. In your book, Heideko, you write about how, as a child, you, quote, lost your universe. Can you elaborate on that for our audience?
I use those very big words because I couldn't think of anything at all. I totally lost everything. I meant anything and everything I had a relationship with, you know. I was an only child. No sisters or brothers. Losing your mother who never came home. Your life is gone. I was so totally dependent on her. Everything was done for me. And suddenly, that world was gone. And it was gone with a flash. Even though my mother was ground zero, probably died very shortly thereafter, My attachment to her saved me. She lives within my heart, even to this day. I'm a human being who almost nearly died directly up with the nuclear bomb, and then consequences. And I mean, I was sick and bordered life and death, and I really went through it. I, you know, have had tumors in thyroid and lungs and lots of health issues. Why must we go through this? Why does it have to happen? We lost so much, you know, of our own loved ones and everything we were attached. We understood a true value of surviving. And all of the survivors dedicated ourselves to work for helping to build peace. We did not wish anyone else to experience what we did. Depending on the approach and your attitude and perception, your experience can be worst hell on earth or the most reconciling, motivating initiative, which I, you know, try to make it. I never, ever give up. I think that's the part that kept me going, that I never gave up. And I don't know what gave me that. I think I'm still waiting for my mother to come back and then tell her, hey, Mom, look at what I tried to do and got done. And I haven't done that yet. You know, so it could be just as simple as childish as that.
I want to ask you about some of your experiences that helped you come to terms with what you refer to in your book as the deepest grief at the bottom of your heart.
Well, a lot of people ask me, aren't you angry? How would I be angry? You had nothing to do with any of the, you know, government's actions. If I have any greatest grief aimed at, it's the Manhattan Project. Manhattan Project. And, you know, Oppenheimer happened to be a brilliant theoretical physicist. But they created the bomb that goes, you know, the thermal force will go this way and it'll destroy. But when it go touch object, and then they don't stop. That thermal wind had a going back power. They programmed it. And that had a sucking function. And then I understood why people's eyeballs popped up and the inside came out. The science, mind you, were supposed to enhance quality of human life and humanity, concentrating every single detail, how heinously can the human beings be tortured and killed. Now that comes to a pretty worst end of a civilization. And we even know a little bit how that Big Bang happened. And far be it for me to question, no, the Big Bang didn't mean for you to be so wicked. I think that we hold infinite possibility within ourselves, with our higher nature, from what we call good and what we call unfortunate, which is total insistence that we know competing for survival. Self-insistence and self-preservation needs to be there to protect ourselves and our survival. But staying alive and acquire, that is the question. Acquire gold, acquire material, acquire tons of cats and dogs, acquire beautiful garden. I think acquire at the center of ourselves define who you are and who you want to be. For me, because my universe was gone and my sorrow and grief about it kept on through very sick, sick, numbing force that we all have. You know, if you had something absolutely living hell, you don't want to stay with the image or with feelings. I mean, it's a very natural human reaction to cover so that you have no more feelings. But you can't cover your feelings over your mother and over the cousin who was like a brother. And that it has to turn into a grief. And a grief will not throw things away, at least for me. I lost everything, but this was war. And war, as if there was one party who did real bad and the other party that did good. And there's no winners. It's the collateral victims who had no part in bringing in the destruction that ends up with grief. Amazing thing is that the being grief and not being angry, not because I was noble, but it just happened that way. Really, I could understand, even if I numb myself through my life, not to have a real feelings about connected to it. And it was a real sacrifice as a human being, not to have had a life with, you know, real close feelings. But I learned one thing I think that still helps me today is that the minute I found out I lost everything in my universe, I made a conscious decision that I was going around making people laugh. To this day, I laugh with any trigger. So I don't sit, I laugh. Only crazy people laugh inappropriately at bad times, but I do. It's just automatic.
Give us a specific picture of a moment in your life where you knew that peace building and peace activism was your path to reconciliation with the past.
You know, these things come with accumulation of many, many moments. I'm not the put together noble person, you know, like a respectable Japanese who looks respectable and speaks in respectable way and don't laugh like I do. It's an accumulation of life experiences that I brought, I lived through by choice, you know, that you have to do it consciously. I thought bring on change in this totally lost, dark society. And so I was starting since teenage years where we need to go. Also, because my parents were, you know, giving me the freedom to do my own thinking and decision, I was thinking towards reconciliation type of a future. I think the seeds were there then in Hiroshima. And the survivors, the grown adults were saying, no more Hiroshima, don't let anybody else on this earth experience what we went through. And that was the right attitude. I think they had a global thought. And so without me, you know, actually understanding it, I came to acquire global attitude. Thank heavens. Yeah. So I can't think of any one moment or one incident. One thing I have that these people are probably a little short of is immediately merge with where you might be coming from and wanting to sync with you. That I have. So every time I master speak to a, you know, like academic institutions or college students and, you know, auditorium, I don't make a very large notes. I wait until I get there and I say a few things. And then I really, really try to tune in on if they got it. And then what they are wanting, that gives me the one time on the 50th, I think, anniversary, I was on the stage with Kurt Vonnegut. He's a fantastic, clever guy. Honestly, I was enormously impressed when he said, you know, I don't know much Japanese, but I know one swear word in Japanese. And I thought to myself, which word is he going to say? And he said, Nagasaki. You know, he didn't have to say any word to describe or accuse. Mr. Vonnegut, you deserve every award. That was a remarkable experience, being able to recognize ability of others to perceive at a great depth, to understand. I mean, I had enormous curiosity because, remember I told you, all my life I numbed my feelings. So I kept myself away from really encountering, you know, touching the real experience. And that's the reason I had to go everywhere to touch it and see it and experience it. But I realized there was a deep wound on both sides. And my immediate reaction was, we're not the only one that needs to heal. That's where I got the term collective healing.
I'm talking to Dr. Heideko Temera Snyder, who survived the atomic bombing of Hiroshima when she was 10 years old. I want to bring us back to the organization that you founded in 2007.
Yes.
You helped found One Sunny Day Initiatives.
Yes.
Tell us about its mission, mandate, and activities.
My mission was deeply, deeply grieved heart and still living mind to come up with for us all to take care of our wounds together. And that made it necessary to make a bridge and connection. So I did everything I can to bring such connections. How can you work together for collective solutions, negotiations? Japanese should see there are Americans who believe in peace creating and singing peace songs. It worked both ways. And I also brought Japanese over here, you know, and then introduced them to organizations and leaders who are doing worthwhile peace activities and peace creation. And there's a green legacy in Hiroshima. That's the planting of the Hiroshima trees. And also, I drafted and published books. The first book was when peace tree blooms, if you hit on our OSD initiatives website, you will see all about, you know, our mission statement, our books, project, and our green nursing. More than you want to see. Oh, you know, you have so many things and your time is limited.
Maybe you can tell us what you learned while working to promote peace and nuclear non-proliferation.
As serious as I was, and I must be simple-minded, when treated to protest the nuclear weapon was accepted by ICANN, I thought, oh, my job was done. They can do it now. I don't have to be so nauseous talking about anything. The world isn't that simple. Since then, I think there are more countries that possess nuclear weapons. If not offensive, they seem to have a gesture for, you know, defense. I don't think you want to attack us because we will attack you right back, kind of. So my simple-minded joy sort of like turned to a somber realization on this into some indefinite future when every weapon is dismantled, actually. This is going to go. And as long as human beings' brain can put together how to make it, and it's not that complicated to make it, nuclear weapon is going to be here. You know, it was discovered, and it will be here. And if it wasn't Oppenheimer, somebody else would have come up once the force of the nuclear fission was known. We are in a precarious state. We've been given test of nuclear weapon existence. And for me to sit and ponder about, I still go into dark hole and, you know, Big Bang time. What in the world was the whole point of a life being born? That connects right immediately with you, because what's the point of you being here and rattling your mouth? I mean, my mouth. Human beings, we definitely have our nature, and we definitely have to choose. And we have, thank heavens, a choice, even though some people's, you know, social determinism, you have no choice. No, no, no. You go way, way deep inside, you have a choice. Your real responsibility to yourself is how you exercise that choice. And I hope and pray it is a caring one for the planet. And I try to do that with all my project.
What is the message you think the world needs to hear right now in regards to nuclear weapons and the threat of nuclear war?
Do you love your child baby? Do you want that baby to grow up? Do you want that baby to have trees around, grass to sit on? Or if you are not inclined in that direction, do you like to rise, stay alive, connect your body with your mind and heart, and three of them together called life and being alive? However you want to be alive is your business, but it is the business of human race for you to be quality alive, which is being happy and caring. So, be alive, and I hope you will be caring in quality in your own way. Otherwise, kind of a wasting your time being here.
In conclusion, Heideko, I'm wondering if you would be willing to read your poem, Memories of Wounds and Joy, for us.
I wrote this at the request of my good friend from the military academy days. He became administrator of one of the trading company, and his business was in China. And you know, Japanese are hated in China. I know how Japanese behaved in China, and we had a lot to apologize for. So I did it for my friend, but I put my heart into it. Memories of Wounds and Joy. Letter of apologies to the people of China. Forgive me for not speaking out of my terror before now. At finding out as a young teen of the horrific victimization you suffered at the hands of our military. Forgive me for feeling powerless when only the sickened feelings return even now as I felt the pain of your wounds disconnected in shame from the sins of history. For you were a guest in our home as my grandfather's partner, revered and commanding all our attention under the head of our family. For you were my favorite storybooks of enchanting heroes of the Three Kingdoms, of Monkey's Empire, flying across the sky all through my childhood, shedding tears and laughing time and again, sharing the common bond with your mother continent, mountains, rivers, and the misty valleys. We grew up seeing the scrolls and screens in our homes. We remember them, even after they were lost in the war fire. You were the forebearers and teachers. We owe much to you for our own heritage in arts, religion, and values we share. When I mourned after our losses in our own war memories, sensitized to our own pain alone, we've erred hopelessly without seeing the acts of violence perpetrated outwardly of their consequences to our neighbors. I lost my universe to the atom bomb, but I hid from their impacts, trying to hold myself together with dignity and wholeness, yet holding on to the hurts of wounding. But I was wrong. There was no hiding. There was no wholeness in inhumane experience. The imperfections and consequences from the inhumane wounding slowly surfaced, and I began to see for all the perils and the darkness of losses and their memories that you must have endured for so long. I am truly sorry. Please forgive me. Forgive if such a thing is possible in collective healing with me. Let us honor our beginning from the ancient times of joy and respect again.
Heideko Tamara Snyder, you are a special soul. Thank you so much for your time today.
It was a privilege and honor. Thank you.
You heard an interview with Dr. Heideko Tamara Snyder, co-founder of One Sunny Day Initiatives. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, Lisa Hayes, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from the bonus album, The Circle is Cast. On behalf of Wings series producer Frieda Worden, I'm Robin Erickson. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of CFRC 101.9 FM, Radio Queen's University.